Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it. Today we have an interesting show on a topic most of you know by now is of great interest to me, predictive coding. Today, about 10% of ESI Byte's almost 200 podcasts have been on predictive coding, which is by far the most popular topic, and we were even cited in a brief in DeSilva Moore. So it's no great surprise that we focus on predictive coding. It's one of the most popular topics in the legal press. It gets more than its fair share of CLE attention at Georgetown and legal tech, and as the show's creator, sponsor, and the host, my having worked in that field is one of its early advocates, even before I began working in the field professionally, makes it a natural topic for me to cover. Today we're going to talk about this topic from the perspective of surveying how people are using predictive coding, and the reason for this is, in my professional experience, this is a field which gets far more press coverage than actual work being done in the space. So if predictive coding were a fire, all you would see is smoke, and you might not even feel any heat, but you'd see lots and lots of smoke. So what we're trying to do with the eDiscovery Journal is predictive coding surveys to actually peer through the smoke and get closer to the flames and get a better understanding of what's actually happening in the trenches. So for today's show, my guest is Barry Murphy, who's co-founder and analyst with the eDiscovery Journal. They sponsored this survey, and I also do some adjunct consulting work and writing with them on the predictive coding area. Prior to the eDiscovery Journal, Barry was director of product marketing at Mimosa Systems, a leading content archiving and eDiscovery software company. He joined Mimosa after a stint as principal analyst for eDiscovery records management and content archiving at Forrester Research. Barry Murphy and I put this survey together. We've been doing some joint research on this topic, and it's great to have you on the show, Barry.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And I'm going to do the unusual step of introducing myself because I'm a passive guest on the show. My name is Carl Shinneman, and although I'm the host, I'm going to inject some of my thoughts on predictive coding. I've spent almost 4 years pushing for more use of analytics and evolved into predictive coding. I started a consulting practice called ReviewLess, focusing on the area. And 2 years ago, I worked with a lawyer in Pittsburgh named Tom Grix to try and find a case to show that predictive coding could be used even when another party was adverse to it. And we got that chance last year, which was, of course, a case called Global Aerospace v. Landau Aviation, or better known as the Virginia case, which is the first case to pass through the predictive coding stages after a challenge and complete discovery with the production, which relied on search through several million documents, largely with predictive coding and absolutely no keywords. At some point soon, there's going to no doubt be more written about this case as the production's been completed and now depositions are being conducted, but not on this show today. This is a story for another day with my colleague Tom Grix as my guest. But this case does signal that these tools are more than concept cars at car shows. They can be used by the legal community today, and once the legal community learns about these tools. Anyway, that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. The purpose of today's show is to announce the survey and to get more interest in the survey that Barry and I created. So let's start the show. First of all, Barry, why do a survey on predictive coding? You heard my thoughts. Do you have anything to add to it?
Yeah, there's really two reasons to do a survey on predictive coding. One is what you're mentioning, right? There's a lot of smoke. We don't know where that fire is. So it's time to take predictive coding from the 10,000-foot view down to the 10-foot view and even closer if possible. So it's time to get real. But the other major reason is that impetus for change often comes when people are able to benchmark themselves against others. And so the great thing about data is that it gives people a way to assess where they are vis-a-vis their peers. So the reason we want to do this survey on predictive coding is to help corporations understand what other corporations are doing, to help law firms understand what other law firms are doing, and really help them find that impetus for change if they haven't already found it on their own.
So before we get too far into this, where is the survey found? How does someone actually complete the survey?
Yeah, the easiest way to find the survey is to go to the ediscoveryjournal.com homepage. And at the top of that page is a banner for the survey. So just click on that banner, and the survey will pop up in another window.
Now, one of the areas that I, you know, before I started working with you guys in the predictive coding area, I did some survey of my own, and I'd always run into these problems on confidentiality. You know, I've done some half-completed surveying work in the area, and it's hard to get lawyers to answer questions about their approaches. I talked about this at length in a podcast regarding the study done by Rand Institute, and they had to pull teeth to get five companies to help them. And lo and behold, it helps the industry see what the heck everyone's doing and how to improve. I mean, none of us who do this understand why people have problems with it, so I think we got to talk about confidentiality right away.
Yeah, three points I would make on confidentiality. First is that no one needs to share any information within the context of this survey that would make them identifiable. So while we do ask for an email address, it's not required. We only ask for those that want to be entered into a drawing to win what they can get for being in the survey or to get the copy of the summary report. But there's no requirement to enter that email address. Second is EDJ Group's privacy policy, in which we make clear that we do not share information from our surveys. And then third is just kind of our reputation for integrity. We deal with a lot of companies that talk to us about what they're doing, and we are under, you know, very strict rules within our company to not disclose that. So, for example, we just published a predictive coding case study whereby a very large organization gave us a real case study of when they use predictive coding. We're asked all the time, can you give us more information on who this company is or how I can relate to them, and we just can't. So we do allow people sort of an outlet, and we keep all of that, you know, under wraps through our privacy policy. But with regards to this survey in particular, again, no identifiable information is required in order to submit the survey response.
Okay. So who should take the survey? Right, what's the target here?
Yeah. Ideally, anyone who practices law would make for a good survey respondent. So we would love to see the in-house corporate folks taking the survey so that we can kind of contrast their results to other demographics. Law firm folks are also great because, you know, again, we want to sort of compare and contrast what corporations are doing versus their law firms and what the attitudes are, and understand where the experience is actually, you know, playing out and who's doing this.
And, you know, I should add, this is, you know, vendor neutral across all platforms. This isn't advocating any one particular approach or any particular tool. It's trying to get within this sort of global space called predictive coding. Do we have anyone that we would be unhappy if we got taken the survey?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that if vendors came in and took the survey, it probably wouldn't make for valuable results. We have a way to sort of segment those responses, simply because we don't want anyone trying to drive up the numbers simply because it's beneficial to them. So really looking for actual practitioners, who have or want to be practitioners taking this, hopefully the vendors will sort of opt out of it, but we also have a way to catch that if they don't.
Yeah, we're not looking to promote vendor of the year here,
right,
in the space. That's not an output. This is really about results from the overall space, how people are perceiving it, how what they're encountering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to have worked with predictive coding to take the survey?
Absolutely not. In fact, the way the survey works is there's some logic in it that if you have not worked with predictive coding, it will take you to another set of questions designed to look at some of the reasons why you might not have, and then some of your attitudes toward it. So I would encourage both users and those who are either adamantly against or are just investigating use of predictive coding, all of that will be valuable. So the survey will sort of take you where you need to go based on your answers to the questions. To choose your own adventure, so to speak.
And how long does each adventure take, you know, for users and those who just have opinions?
So for folks that have used this, it should take less than 5 minutes. And for folks that have not, those secondary questions, it should really be less than 2.5 minutes in total.
Okay, not a big investment. And so what do you get for doing the survey outside of the opportunity to win, you know, a handheld device or something like that, or whatever you're offering.
Yeah, so there's a drawing for a $250 gift card, which is always nice, but the real value comes from getting the summary result report, which we will send to all of those who leave an email behind for us to send it to them. That will allow you to sort of compare and contrast where you are in the context of the larger group. So we'll send a summary report as well as do a drawing for a $250 gift card. And there's always the satisfaction of, taking a survey and helping out the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I personally would fill in the information email link simply because I think, you know, if you're taking the survey, you're interested in learning more about the field. And getting information back is, to me, you know, the biggest driver. I mean, I suppose, you know, people like myself also have a higher good view of let's try to help the industry. That's why I would do something like this. But if I were sitting in a firm or at a company, I'd want the benchmarking data to help steer my practice area the right way. And the only way you're going to get that is by putting in your information on how to contact you. But in my experience, people, you know, in this field, it's not a big field of e-discovery, tend to know each other. And as a result, being ethical and honest is the only way to you really survive in this field long term.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the reasons why I agreed to start working with you guys 6 months ago and helping you is you passed my smell test a while ago, given your backgrounds. And, I throw my name behind these sort of initiatives, with all the free education we've done here at ESI Bytes. I just think this is really important to be pushing the field forward.
I think you're right. And, you know, so hopefully those that want to get the summary report will allow us to send it out to them, and we maintain all that confidentiality. There will be other places where we share this kind of data and our analysis of it. It will probably feed a number of different research reports that we'll write as analysts. Some of them we will probably expose via eDiscovery Journal articles. And kind of put out there for the world to comment on. And then, there's certainly some more educational events that we have coming up together, Carl, that we can expand on later. But I think, having some really good data there is going to make for really good opportunity to educate people and to understand, when you're educating people on predictive coding, the data is going to allow us to know why people are using it, why they're not, what are the major concerns, and you can begin to sort of tweak educational materials towards those things. So, for example, if we found out that the major reason that those who didn't use predictive coding was simply the lack of established case law, we can sort of, educate people as to why that may not be a good reason to not use it.
Great example. I remember years ago, the eDiscovery Institute did a survey on predictive coding in 2010, and when I looked at the results as a complete outsider just looking at the results, the number one reason was defensibility. And I started going around talking to judges about this. What do you think? And that was very instructive for myself personally to hear what over 30 judges thought about defensibility. And I can tell you the thought process from the people in the trenches who were filling the survey out and what you'd hear from the judges were remarkably different. But because of that data, you didn't know you had a red herring issue out there that needed to be addressed further to explore it. Because, you know, if people perceive that to be an issue, that's what the marketplace thinks. Anyway, I think it's very useful. I'm thrilled to be working with you on the survey, and I hope we get great results.
Yeah, thanks so much for your help with it. And like I said, just the final point on it is, you know, this is really going to help us go from the theoretical. I think, you know, everything is focused on some of the sensational case law and some of the, you know, potential ROI associated with predictive coding, and those things are extremely important. But they're also, you know, not necessarily down in the weeds hitting on the issues that people are going to encounter on a day-to-day basis. And we hope with this survey to hit on some of those issues and then have some real data to put, you know, aside the opinions, you know, as we go forward.
And I should mention, this is not a survey my daughter, Chelsea Shenneman, is participating in. I think predictive coding would kill her. But she was very helpful in doing some surveying on document review with the eDiscovery Journal support. And but this is a completely different survey. So, Barry, thank you for joining us here at ESI Bytes. I'm sure we'll talk more about some of these educational initiatives that we're working on together. But it's a pleasure to have you share your knowledge with us and our listeners, and we'll do some of those more podcasts later this year on the educational boot camps. I'd also like to thank Jurnov, my good friends over there, for their continued support of ESI Bytes. And to the listeners, if you've enjoyed the podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You could remember the show and website phonetically. It sounds out as Easy Bytes of ESI Information. However you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes, learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, President and Founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.